99, proceeded.
Redbird Sports Talk. Interviews and professional sports news all in one place.
Redbird's playing a lot on the outside. Open three for Poindexter. Got it.
The quarterback just couldn't figure out the passing game.
You're listening to Red Zone, only on 103.3 WZND. Blasting off in 3, 2, 1.
Happy Thursday, Birds. Welcome to this edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Mike McNally joined by Benjamin Hootie and Braden Fulgerson. Any way you want it, that's the way you need it on WZND.com and 103.3 WZND FM. Fellas, how are we doing on a fine Thursday night with warm conditions for once out in the normal community area?
Did we just skip the winter? Like, we had two real bad weeks of winter, but, like, looking ahead to the next 2 weeks, it's, like, forecasting to be this way every day. Like, I think we skipped the winter.
Have you lived in this state at any
point in your life?
I know,
but it's weird. Like, this is...
What are you saying?
I understand that. I understand that. And we had this debate earlier. I was talking to a friend, and I was like, it's kind of suspicious, because usually in this state, we get that December, you know, it's cold, but it's not that bad. And then you get to January, and then you get a really, really bad winter where it's just constant snow and cold, and it usually sticks through, like, February. Kind of skipping that right now.
We had the week of it, though. We had, like, that one really terrible week.
Yeah, but that was it. Like, usually it's...
I'm with Fulgerson. I think you're jinxing it.
If, like, I'm jinxing it, that's fine. But, like, we're going to... It's going to be weather on the Super Bowl that we can go out and play football and watch the game.
During the big game, I'm sure it'll be very cold. Not in Las Vegas, though. Did you guys see the ticket prices for that, by the way, before we get into it?
I bet.
Nearing $10,000. I just talked about it in my 5:30 newscast. $9,800 is the average price, up 70% from last year's big game. And a lot of that probably has to do with it being in Viva Las Vegas, I would think. Other than that, I don't know why it would be that up 70%. Would you drop $10,000 on a big game ticket if you had the ability to do that? Because you have to get out to Vegas too. Like, even for people that have the ability to do that, I feel like that's even steep.
It's not including food or...
In Las Vegas, yeah. Which is one of the most expensive cities in the world.
Not for this matchup. Would I spend that? Maybe for, you know, my favorite team or something like that, but not for this one.
Spoken like a true Chiefs hater.
And a Niners hater.
You're a Niners hater too?
Yeah, because they used to play across the bay from each other before the Raiders left. And
oh, I forgot. I always forget you're a Raiders fan. I would think you're a Rams fan with your St. Louis connections.
Yeah.
Well, now St. Louis or Rams have left you too.
And most St. Louis fans are Chiefs fans now.
No, yeah. That's not true. That's not true.
Put this rumor to rest.
They are frustrated with the Rams, but I mean, well, there's a good amount that switch to Chiefs, but there's also a good amount that, like, still hate the Chiefs.
Yeah, interesting.
But I don't know.
All right, let's talk about the Redbird women's basketball team. Braden Fulgerson, I believe you had the call last weekend. As the Redbirds, you and Lauren Leisure, as the Redbirds knocked off Drake. And that's a huge win for a variety of reasons, but the most of which is because that's a team that ended their season prematurely last year. What does it say about this Redbird team now on a two-game win streak that they are some of the best in the Valley and they were able to beat a team that got them last year, who has come back and had a really solid season as well?
Well, talk to Coach after the game about it, and you know, she didn't really build it up to be any bigger than I thought she would. I mean, I figured she wouldn't be like, oh, we absolutely hate this team and all that. But, you know, talking to Coach, she was definitely willing to be, you know, talking about how it does mean a lot to be facing this team and to have to play them. And, you know, talked a lot on the broadcast about how Illinois State has a losing record against the Bulldogs, and yet they still have a winning record at home against them. And, the home crowd was able to pull through again and give them the strength that they needed to lead from the second quarter on. And every single time Drake tried to claw back, Illinois State was able to hang on. They were able to get some big shots. They had down the stretch some phenomenal shooting from the players that you typically need down low. And to be able to spread the floor like that really saved the Redbirds and helped them hold on to that win.
Winners of five of their last six. They'll see Drake again on the road in Des Moines. But before then, they have a month of games to round out their season before hoops in the Heartland. Ben, you've watched this team up close and personal. Sometimes you even got the camera. Maybe you got graphics as you're running production for this team. What has been your thoughts of this team compared to where they were last year at this moment? With about a month left, the hype is back.
Yeah.
What do you think about this team?
Well, it's definitely been a different kind of season because last year they were so good. I don't know how many losses they end up having like
not very many at all. I think just Belmont got them in the regular season.
So it's a little different because they were struggling to kind of piece this thing together. But there was never a doubt that they were going to be good as long as they kind of they kept a similar roster from a year ago. They're one of the best coach teams in the Valley, and I think the biggest thing of it all right now is. Not saying that you're being carried by one player, but we might be on Deanna Wilson, MVC Player of the Year watch, because she is just on some kind of a streak right now, scoring, along with getting the rebounds, obviously. Paige Robinson was snubbed last year, and it might actually be returning this year for Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year with Deanna Wilson.
Paige Robinson in her 1 year in the Valley was electric and was the women's player of the year for any sport at Illinois State University, which is a pretty prestigious award in and of itself. This team goes into Hoops in the Heartland in a month. There you have a month of games ahead of time. It'll kick off actually in a little bit over a month in March 14th through March the 17th. Braden, you were there last year with Tim Zalabak on those calls in Moline. What went wrong when they played Drake in the second round of that tournament? Because it felt like Ben's alluding to with Paige Robinson and a great team, they were jet set for the national tournament.
Well, it starts with the first game, because the first game they were supposed to be able to win pretty handily, and it actually came down to it. The Redbirds made that a very big nail-biter. They were able to hold out in the end, but it was down to the last few possessions, if I remember correctly. And they came out just so flat the next day. And even though they came off that win, the shooting was not there, I remember. I remember Drake just had a lot of players doing really, really well. They had the momentum from the opening tip, and they just rolled with it. Illinois State kept trying to claw back and just couldn't figure them out. And we saw the complete... You know, not the complete opposite. It's not like Illinois State then blew them out on Saturday, but this Illinois State team that we saw this previous week is way, way better than what they looked like the time before that they faced Drake.
I feel like that confidence grows from the support from former coach of the conference, Krishna Gillespie. She seems like every time I've talked to her this season in a post-game presser has this newfound, I wouldn't even say newfound, but this new confidence, this ability in her team, because they are such a spread out new roster, right? You don't have a Paige Robinson as you did last year. Caroline Waite's been a very strong player. Deanna Wilson's been a very strong player. Maya Wong has been a great player. Deja Smith's been great. It's a roster that's full of players that really know how to play basketball together. Not to say in years past they weren't, but when you're missing Paige Robinson and Mary Crompton, one thing we keep saying on the show is, yes, they're not rolling the entire conference that they did maybe last year, but they're getting scrappy, solid team wins. And that's really all that matters when it comes down to it. And it might make them a better team headed into that tournament.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, I don't know how much more analysis I can give because I agree with it completely. But ultimately, how do you prep? How do you avoid kind of falling apart down the stretch and make sure that you're ready to go and not, you know, too loose with it, but definitely not, you know, either battered and injured or just really exhausted. I mean, you need to have all your ducks in a row because, you know, the odds are you're probably going to face a team that is as primed and ready to go as they can. And you've got to be ready for that. You can't look past even, you know, the lowest seed opponents.
The Birds migrate onto a away road trip. Indiana State on Sunday at noon. You and I on Thursday at 6 p.m. and then Drake next Saturday at 2 p.m. Of course, they will not be on the road that entire time. They're student athletes. They have class just like the rest of us. They'll be back. But before we get on with the segment, let's talk first about this men's team who also has been able to piece together a couple nice wins. And I don't know if you fellas saw, but Ryan Peden, the head coach of your Illinois State Redbirds, is so excited. He's showing up at local establishment Pub 2 on a Wednesday night. It's busiest night. Just to get the crowd excited. He said in his speech, he said, on the way home, I thought, where are all the Redbird fans going to be at the pub? Where's all the people going to be at the pub? He just showed up, got on the microphone at the bar and told everybody, come on out this weekend. I think that will genuinely bring in fans. If you're going to do a recruiting mission like that to bring in fans as he does regularly, that is the audience to target. And I guarantee you they're going to have a bigger crowd now on Saturday because of it.
They do a great job with that. They do a great job marketing when it's a game that needs to be, that they want fans there. He's always talked about bringing basketball back to this town, and he wants to fill that arena as much as he possibly can. And it's a big game. You know how big the rivalry is with Bradley, and he really wants he probably wants Bradley, a team that's really good this year, to feel the impact of the crowd that the crowd can end up playing. Because we've seen it before. The crowd does play an impact in some of these games. So it's exciting stuff, and hopefully we can get a pretty packed arena. I know it's a nationally televised game, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
I just wish it was a night game. I mean, 1 p.m. on Saturday will also be pretty well attended, but I remember in 2022, and what was Dan Mueller's final year, when we still had SEC Sixth Man of the Year, Antonio Reeves on roster, Kentucky's leading scorer, by the way. We still had him on roster. They hosted Bradley on a Saturday night, and it was the most full I've ever seen Redbird Arena in my time at ISU. I mean, it was awesome. And they got the nice win at the end, and it ended up being a great game and a great night. I wish it was a night game. I think that would bring even better energy, but the 1 p.m. start on Saturday will be awesome. Feels like we say this about every game. Braden has the call.
That's right, yeah.
What do you think about this one heading into it with a team that is the winners of their last game at Murray State this week?
I think Bradley's a completely different opponent. And to be honest, the rivalry's so big to both teams, it doesn't matter what each team looks like. It's going to be a close, gritty battle. It's probably going to be a little bit chippy at times as well. But both teams bring their A game when they face each other in any sport. And that's what I think. I don't think it'll be a really good game. I would be very surprised to see a double-digit difference at the end of it.
Absolutely. And then the rest of this Redbird schedule kind of shakes out similar to the women's team. They get on a little bit of a road trip. They're going to have another home game against USC on Marquee Sports Network on Wednesday. And then after that, they go on a road trip to Southern Illinois, Indiana State, and they play some more games out there. They'll play Bradley again on February 24th, and then they'll round out their season at Valpo on March 3rd, a couple home games sprinkled between. Then they head to St. Louis, where they won game one on Thursday 2 years ago, but last year fell on Thursday, the year before that fell on Thursday, and have created a common trend of always never even booking the hotel for more than just a night. What do you need to see from this Redbird team at 5-6 in the Valley to kind of move up the standings and promote themselves better heading into the tournament? Because it's a very packed middle of the crowd. They're not towards the bottom, but they're not towards the top. They could really bump themselves up ahead of St. Louis.
Yeah, I think it just starts with kind of what we've been seeing lately. 2 weeks ago, we came on the show and kind of ripped them apart a little bit for their lack of what felt like effort.
Well, like a 7-game losing streak.
Exactly. And now it feels like things are kind of coming together. I really like what I've been seeing out of the young guys. Johnny Kinzinger and Chase Walker, who was initially supposed to not play at all this year. He was going to redshirt his freshman year, but they broke his redshirt, and he has been playing really well. I'm trying to give me 1 second.
Well, Johnny Kinzinger was named the Valley Freshman of the Week.
And then Chase Walker the other day had 5 points of his own and 2 rebounds. So they're just playing well. Burford has been the star player that's kind of been advertised throughout this entire time. You knew he was always going to anchor the scoring for their team. And Miles Foster has been a great pickup as well. So it finally feels like they're kind of putting the pieces together. And if they could ride that streak into St. Louis, hopefully they can win the first game, because it's obvious, as you said, it's been a little bit.
It was after that tough loss, 59-50 at Sefke Arena against Valpo on January 14th. It was after that tough loss in a random Sunday day game against Valpo that I think it was when Ryan said something on the lines of he's just, you know, going to start giving some guys a shot who are ready to put it all out there. Not to say no one else didn't want to, right? I guarantee you this whole team wants to win. They want to put out their effort. But that kind of made it sound like it was those younger guys. And you've seen a lot of Johnny Kinzinger since that Horton game especially, but in the last week. And it bore fruit. He was able to win the MVC Freshman of the Week in tow. So to look at this team, and as you said, Ben, to have a freshman break his redshirt, they're not done. They're not giving up. They're at a decent spot in the middle of the conference, and they know that this team could get scrappy and go for a run in the conference. Although Indiana State's getting so good, they're getting national attention.
It's crazy.
You know, shooters are always going to be a help, no matter what size or shape they are, what year they are. You can always use shooters, you know, if they have a specialty in the corner or if they just like to get themselves space. If you can get yourself some separation and put them in the game, you're going to have to cover that guy. So it always can lead to opportunities when you have a guy like Kinzinger come in, and even though he's young, even though he's pretty new to the team, being able to just immediately come in and play well.
stick around. 6:45 or so for our final segment of the day. We're going to talk more college basketball. We're going to introduce a new segment, bring it back after 2 years, actually, called Three Up, Three Down. We're going to talk about favorites and not in the realm of Division I men's college basketball and give our picks, kind of like Pick Six, but looking at the college basketball sphere. Before then, though, we got some talk about our favorite sports stories in the NFL. You're listening to The Red Zone. One of the 3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Thank you to our listeners, wherever they may be, the Bone Student Center, all around the world, who knows? As we get into Rounding the Bases, one of our favorite segments where we all take a news story about the world of sports and we all get a couple minutes to just discuss and hear some input from the other guys. Leading off today for your Chicago Cubs is Benjamin Hootie, who's going to talk about another Chicago team and a little bit of a quarterback issue.
Yeah. We kind of avoided them for the last couple of weeks because I think we were all kind of frustrated with the situation. And
storm has cleared a little bit.
It seems like a lot of people, no matter how they feel about it, you all end up in the same place. I've kind of had this feeling for a couple of weeks now, even while the Bears were playing. But I am totally officially bought in on the idea of Caleb Williams being the Bears quarterback for the future. It just makes too much sense. And nothing against Justin Fields. I think he's a great guy. I think he tried to deliver as much as he could for this city. And obviously that came with coaching changes and coordinator changes and whatnot. But at the end of the day, I'm seeing what Patrick Mahomes is doing right now with the Chiefs and what he brings to the table as a quarterback. And I'm not saying Caleb Williams is Patrick Mahomes by any mean, but it's just a matter of Justin Fields. While he could be a good quarterback in this league, I think we're at the point where he's not going to be great. And why are you going to pass on the potential of greatness with Caleb Williams, who could be a top five quarterback in the league? Before this year, he was, I think the narrative has switched on him a little bit. Before this year, he was a Trevor Lawrence, Andrew Luck type prospect that everybody wanted. And after a year at USC where the offense was still really good, it's just was a team that wasn't really well put together, all of a sudden the narrative has switched. Still, he's the number one pick, no doubt, but I think that the Bears should 100% buy in on him, build around him. They have a roster that's already pretty formidable and pretty solid, continue to get pieces for him, another offensive lineman or two, and with Caleb next year, I think you could legitimately have the Bears take that Texans jump that they did with C.J. Stroud.
We say it in the show all the time, especially last week discussing the Lions. The Bears' rush defense, the best in the league last year, in addition to a ton of other defensive categories in which they were great at. They just have to spark that offense a little bit. And I agree with you. I was not fully in immediately. I wasn't fully in on Fields either. And I think the best take that I have heard about it was whether you think they should have drafted Mahomes or you think they should have given a chance to C.J. Stroud, or you're like, no, we should have drafted Trubisky, or no, we should have drafted Fields. Whatever you think. At the end of the day, Bears fans on both sides of that aisle sit in their armchair on a Sunday with their chips and dip in lap and have to watch the Bears lose and Mahomes go to his fourth big game.
Yeah.
Or Stroud go to the playoffs in his rookie year. There is something to be said for taking a chance on a talented prospect and just hoping it works out because you don't want it to be another the one that got away for the third time in a decade.
And the other thing about it, too, is you're resetting yourself as well because if you stick with Fields, that's fine. But he's a free agent in a season. This would be his last year of contract. And while Fields hasn't proven to be a top quarterback, someone set the baseline of when you're extending a quarterback, how much money it is, and that's Daniel Jones. And I guarantee you the Giants are regretting paying Daniel Jones all that money. Justin Fields is probably getting right around the same money that Daniel Jones would no matter what his kind of season is.
Yeah.
So now you get to reset everything. You can continue to build up this roster with the amount of cap space that you have, and you get generational talent, Caleb Williams under center, and you don't have to worry about paying him for 4+ years.
Well, but signing the number one pick kind of is a lot of money. I mean, if you take a fourth rounder and then he turns into something really good, then you're saving money that you would have otherwise
it's
had to pay
for.
It's
avoiding a trap contract,
Fields,
though.
But yeah. Yeah, I mean,
it's still
I kind
expense,
of agree. Yeah,
yeah.
I don't know. It's I can't think of would a rookie contract for a number one pick still be cheaper than a second contract for a still not entirely proven player?
Not looking at the numbers? I mean, yes, based on if you think about that contract Daniel Jones has, like Ben alluded it to, that's a disgusting contract.
Well, but Daniel Jones was coming off taking his team to the playoffs, and they were supposedly a year early. Fair enough. Justin Fields would be going into this negotiation saying, I don't know, I brought my team three wins once. I think he probably will get pretty similar money, but he doesn't have as much of a leg to stand on as Daniel Jones had.
Right, but it's just in the NFL, it's all about like setting that baseline. Because think about Daniel Jones obviously got his extension, and that's like the lowest of all the top tier extensions that we've gotten in the NFL. But after that, it was Jalen Hurts got the biggest extension of all time, and then right after that, it was Justin Herbert, and then immediately after that it was Joe Burrow. So I think it would be a similar situation with Fields and Daniel Jones, where Daniel Jones is the baseline for extending your quarterback. Justin Fields is maybe a little bit better than Daniel Jones. I wouldn't even put him at that. So I think that's where it would be.
We move on to our next rounding the base story. Braden, I will kick it over to you.
Oh, sure. So don't have a whole lot of opinions on this, but MLB Network has been in the middle of putting their top 10 at each position for 2024. I'm not coming into this story with like any anger or like, oh my God, this is awful. But some of it's just interesting. Like, for example, okay, so I'll go through the top 10. So starting at 10, Justin Turner making the list as the 10th best third baseman in the league. And he's mostly a DH. He played most of his games a year ago at DH. He's probably going to play even more at only DH at best. And he's number 10. And then you've got Isaac Paredes. Max Muncy is 8. Nolan Arenado is 7. Gunnar Henderson, who's a very young, very high potential prospect, is above Nolan Arenado. Alex Bregman, 5th. And then the top four, which was the same top four as last year, but everything's a little bit rearranged. This Rafael Devers, 4th, Manny Machado, 3rd, Jose Ramirez, 2nd, and Austin Riley, according to MLB Network, is the best third baseman in baseball. The hot corner is kind of it's not really an easy position to judge in terms of who's the best, but I don't know. I just found this whole order a little bit interesting.
Those lists are weird because I don't understand how they do it, because is it based off past success, including their season before
that? I'm pretty sure they say, like, right now. Yeah, the top 10 players right now. But it's still very confusing because, like, how can you say right now you know Gunnar Henderson is better than some of these?
Well, that's what I was going to actually get at.
Yeah.
Because I think Gunnar Henderson, if it's right now, I think Gunnar Henderson's top 3.
What I don't understand.
If you look at his year last year, I mean, Gunnar Henderson was incredible.
I didn't pay enough attention to I kept tabs on him.
He was incredible last year.
Really? Okay.
Yes. Where this list loses, or these lists lose their validity, is that for me, I stopped paying attention after they had the league-wide second baseman rankings, and the NL Gold Glover wasn't even in the top 10. And Nico Horner. It's silly.
Really?
The whole thing
Cody
is
Cody Bellinger
silly.
Wasn't top 10 for center fielders either, and he wasn't top 10 for first baseman, so
even then, I understand like the whole thought of like, which one is he? You know what I mean? Like the same thing with Joe Mauer. Like, oh, you know, can you make him a Hall of Fame first baseman or catcher?
Horner is that bad offensively that
he's
you
not.
Can take away what otherwise is, yeah, Gold Glove talent. Like if you have a Gold Glover and he's just horrendous at hitting, maybe. But I don't think Horner counts, even
top 5. But when you're the best defensive player at your position in one of the leagues,
definitely not
that
an easy position.
Top
either.
10.
Mm-hmm.
I would think so. I mean, I would think that makes you top 2 defensively. So how does that not make you top 10 overall? Like you said, Braden, I don't think any offense could bring that down unless he was atrocious, and he's really not. He's not the best out of those 10, but I don't think he's that atrocious. But yeah, the validity of those lists needs to be checked sometimes when it's considered who's not on there, and maybe they got exactly what they wanted. Maybe it's just a talking point.
At the end of the day, it's all bait.
Mm-hmm.
MLB Network knows exactly what they're doing. It's making us talk about it.
Getting engagement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's fun list to look at and to debate, but I thought it was funny how you said Justin Turner's on there, and I think he played maybe like 10 games at third base last year.
He hit really well. We move on to my story. I'll stay in the diamond. I'm kind of done with this Cody Bellinger stuff.
Oh, I mean, just holding off on waiting?
I want him to be a Cub. I think he's going to be a Cub. Knock on wood. But I just, I'm done with it. Like, the whole report that the Cubs are, you know, the closest team to it. The Cubs are the closest option or whatever, and they're the most favorite option, but, quote, he has no interest in signing anytime soon or whatever the wording was. It's just so stereotypical of his representation. It's the same thing that Bryce Harper did. It's just the whole thing is silly, and it just gets me so worried that, I mean, next week as we get into February, some random team, i.e. the Brewers for Rhys Hoskins, is going to slide in on Bellinger and be like, hey, I know the Cubs are going to give you X million, we're going to just give you a check that's even more. Come waste away here. And he might do it.
Chris Bryant?
Yeah, same thing happened to Chris Bryant.
It's not his fault.
No, it's not, it's not Cody's fault.
We're at the point now where the four of the top six free agents are still on the board, and two of them are pitchers who have to report in 2 weeks. And it's all Scott Boras. It's all Scott
Boras. I'm sure that's going to go well for their first year under contract, right, and they have no stretch at all before they start the season.
It's just it's getting frustrating at this point. I 100% agree with you, because and the worst part is that tweet that came out the other day saying the Cubs are most suited for Cody Bellinger. I've seen it like three times in the last from different people. You know what it is? It's all leverage for other teams to up their offer.
I'm most likely to eat dinner or go to the bathroom tonight. Like, what does that tell us? It doesn't really tell us
that's
anything.
That's just how these reporters are, specifically when it comes to baseball. We don't really see it in other sports, but when it comes to baseball, the off seasons are so slow that these
agents
will throw things over to. Especially, not to call him out or anything, but John Heyman is like the biggest like Boras guy of all time, and he will just feed him rumors so that these teams up their offers.
Well, and that's probably what it is. I hadn't thought of it from that perspective, but yeah, it's kind of like I was alluding to with some team is going to slide in and try and steal his contract from the Cubs and poach an even bigger deal. That's probably what it is. It's like, oh, you know, the Cubs are supposedly the favorite according to Boras, but here comes I don't even know. X random team here, the Kansas City Royals. The Angels with a $200 million deal for 3 years. And here we go. We move. What do you think, Braden?
Well, I actually want to ask a question to you guys in terms of, because, I mean, you know what the Cubs would fit better than I know what the Cubs would fit. Do you feel like the, you know, replacement value for whomever would be the next man up if you can't get Bellinger, do you think the Cubs are still going to be okay?
He just signed in Toronto. Is the problem?
No.
You don't think so?
No. There's no. Their last resort is Cody Bellinger.
No, I'm saying if they don't get Bellinger, Brady's asking what's the replacement man. Justin Turner would have been. He wouldn't have replaced for him. He would have been like Moneyball, like a piece of the puzzle to replace one
guy.
Like,
who would start at center field?
You're not Pete Crow-Armstrong. Fine, but
once he finally gets a major league hit,
you're not replacing the production that Cody Bellinger gave you last year with any player.
No,
and you can do it. I've always alluded to the fact of you could go do it with two players, and that's fine. But it's also just stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on how much the money is, I'm not going to be that upset, because you're getting a guy that's 28 years old. He's already won an MVP, and something clearly worked with him and the Cubs last year, where it feels like his career.
Dustin Kelly.
Exactly. It clearly feels like his career is revitalized and trending in the right direction once again. So they need to get him back, or else you're losing the biggest part of your lineup.
The Cubs cleaned house 3 years ago now, and they had this thought, like, we're going to put together the, quote, next great Cubs team, and then they have yet to tie down a true non-homegrown solid free agent for a deal long enough to buy a jersey.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, well, I guess Dansby fills that void, actually. I should correct myself. Dansby is that void. Hopefully he stays healthy this entire year and he can have a great season. I think he will. I guess Dansby fills that, but I just want to see him do it with Cody so bad, and that would really get me to believe they're back on the right track after signing the most expensive managerial contract in baseball history.
He just feels like he fits in with the fan base, too. Like, the fans really, like, immediately were into the idea of having Bellinger, and if you can get him for a long period of time, I can't think of any Cubs fans that I know that would be upset about that.
Oh, God, no. I don't think anyone would, especially after the year he had last year. I mean, there was talk when we first signed him last year for a one-year contract, like, oh, here's some trade bait. That's almost what he became. I mean, we're living in a world where that could have very well happened without the summer of Mike Tauchman. So it's just a situation where it didn't really work out, but it kind of did. Did you have something, Ben? You held up a finger.
Cody Bellinger's girlfriend followed real estate in Chicago. She's been following real estate in the Chicagoland area.
Like recently, or is this like last year?
Yeah, she's been following accounts for real estate in Chicago.
See, this is reporting. Who can you source that?
Scott Boras.
Cody Del Mendo from CHGO.
Cody Del Mendo, yeah. He does good stuff. Or is that just Ben Hootie? I thought you were literally monitoring Cody's wives or girlfriends.
I'm going to look into this.
Followers.
I'll get back
to you guys. Look at it during the break. When we come back, we'll clean up house about the NFL and the teams that will not be playing next Sunday. You're listening to The Red Zone. Welcome back to The Red Zone. Eric Schweizer just texted me in a group chat, and I was confused what he meant. He said, good to know Mikey's most likely to eat dinner tonight. I was confused. I thought he meant Bellinger, like I was going to be happy. But no, it was my saying. I said, like, most likely to go to the bathroom right there. Eric, good to talk to you, man. Sorry, I didn't get it at first, but then right as we came back from break, I acknowledged what that meant. A former ZND alum.
Eric Schweizer.
The Schwiz Show.
Yeah.
Risky Schwizness. He's coming out for another. We got to have him come on for something at some point. But fellas, we move on to the NFL, and what I kind of called this segment was talking about the 30 other teams, because next week we're going to have a whole show focusing in on the Niners and Chiefs. Yet again, we'll talk about the Chiefs. We'll talk about the ins and outs. We'll give you lots of attention to every supporting character in that cast, and Christian McCaffrey and Ben's girl Taylor Swift.
And Kyle Juszczyk's wife that's Kristen. Actually... like very, very talented.
Very talented.
Yeah.
Very talented.
I wonder, there was an argument today in the station. Is she going to make jackets or X merch here for Taylor Swift and Brittany Mahomes for the Super Bowl?
That might be tough, to be honest. I don't know if I would want to do that, but
it's a competitive spirit. I don't know. Do you do that? Do you just say, no, now we're playing each other. We can't do that. I don't know what. That'll be one of our full 15 minutes next week. We'll have to talk about Will.
We'll talk about fashion. Do we have anyone in Z&D? This is a fashion. Call to anyone listening at Z&D that also works here. If you understand fashion, we will put you on and let you talk about Kyle Juszczyk's wife's ability to put together some NFL fashion. So
Leo's listening too. He just texted.
I want one of those jackets.
Well, you're going to have to buck up. I don't know how much they are, but especially now that they're NFL licensed.
What do you think? Who do you think I should get on it? Caleb Williams.
Cole Kmet.
Cole
Kmet.
Well, I saw Taylor Lautner at an Aiden Hutchinson
one.
So at first I was like.
He was getting flamed for that though.
It's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
A little weird. I don't want it. I don't want a Caleb Williams one.
You just said you were all in on Caleb Williams last segment.
I don't want a jacket.
Are you past the age of buying jerseys? Like, I will never buy a Connor Bedard jersey. I have a Connor Bedard t-shirt.
I have a t-shirt.
I will never buy a Connor Bedard jersey.
He was born. He's younger than you?
Not even, like, Pete Crow Armstrong's younger than me. That's fine. Connor Bedard is born in 05. I was born in 02.
I think there will be a point where you're okay with it. Like once he's
no,
winning.
I'll just wear. I'll
go,
anyone 40 and up doesn't wear jerseys because they refuse.
I'll go to a
to.
Game and I'll either wear a quarter zip or I'll wear a Blackhawks jersey, but it'll be like Jonathan Taves or something.
Well, you've never seen a green Paul Konerko shirt on every dad in the South Side Chicago. Excuse me, jersey.
My own dad says all the time that I think his most modern jersey he has is. Maybe he has a Sammy one. I've seen him wear a Ryan Sandberg one before, but he's always said, like, I don't think he has anything, you know, turn of the century at all.
Both of my jerseys are outdated, but only by like a year and not, you
we
know,
talked about that with the Cardinals
decades.
Jerseys.
Yeah.
That's recent development, but that's also fine because when you go to games the rest of your life, you'll wear a Molina jersey or something because that's who you grew up watching.
Yeah. I mean, it's not Molina. For anyone listening, it's Tyler Broneal and It's him and it's
Wainwright?
No.
Or is it another random?
Yeah, it's our why
Troy Gloss.
We traded him to the Orioles. Flaherty. But those are the two guys that I have. But I don't know. I like them. I just don't like the obvious favorites. I like the people that are a little bit more of a deep cut.
Yeah, I bet you don't have a Keegan Thompson Cubs jersey.
No.
This
no.
is true, by the way.
I do.
Yeah.
I have an Adam Scott NHL All-Star jersey.
Really?
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. I was playing NHL 17 the other day, was playing as that team when he got, like, fan-voted onto the All-Star team because he was just, like, a career enforcer. And
talking about awesome. John Scott.
John Scott, excuse me. Adam Scott's the golfer. But it's yeah, I'm talking about John Scott, excuse me. We move on to the NFL segment where we talk about the 30 teams that didn't make it. And why don't you guys take it away?
I mean, we can start. Do you want to start with last week's losers?
I think we start with Detroit. We talked so much about
them. We had a Detroit episode last week that kind of blew up in our faces. But, I mean, it was great to have Steve on. But we all really finally felt confident about Detroit, even me.
They did. They looked really good.
They should have won that game.
It's Campbell. I swear.
Yeah.
Wait, what do you mean it's Campbell?
It's Dan Campbell.
He might be a coordinator merchant.
Not only is he maybe a coordinator merchant, he's a insane leader of men. That's for sure. Yeah, you go.
I'll start.
You go. Take it away.
That was an unbelievable collapse that happened on Sunday. But you got to give them their flowers at the same time, too. They were not supposed to be in this position at all if you looked at it back a year ago. As you said, Dan Campbell, unbelievable leader of men, and their biggest win. They've probably already won the offseason with the fact that Ben Johnson denied every head coaching job in the NFL to return to be their offense coordinator.
Yeah.
Just an awesome offense. And you talk about the decisions. I'm okay with it, but there was, I think the biggest one was when they were when it was fourth and two. You could have gone up three scores and you were inside the 40. Take the points. They would have been up three scores and they would have ended up probably winning the game. So just take the points. At times, it's such an interesting dynamic with Campbell, and it will hopefully he doesn't get to the levels of what Brandon Staley was, because that got really out of hand. But they're a really good team with a really good future, and them keeping Ben Johnson around,
the biggest deal.
Yeah, and they're going to spend probably a lot of money this offseason to fix that defense and maybe get a wide receiver.
People keep connecting Mike Evans.
Yeah, don't worry, Gavin. I'm here to be Dan Campbell's strongest soldier here for a minute. I feel like there was reason to criticize that play in particular, but the Lions, first of all, obviously, they got there by having that strategy all the time. A one field goal game was not going to correct the problem that you've completely lost all your momentum. And it was definitely not a chip shot. They don't have a great kicker. And that field, that turf is like horrendous. It is, it's a brand new stadium, but it has been for years since its inception. People have complained about the turf, which leads to more variables about a kick from how I think it was like 50 yards.
No,
40 something.
One of them was outside the 50, and another one was from inside the 40.
Yeah. I don't even remember where it was spotted in terms of the hashes, too, but I don't know. I think what I feel like is that you stick with what works.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
And so even after the fact, like, you got to hand it to him in the post-game presser, like, standing by, you know, that people have their gripes, but also standing by and, you know, saying that he feels like he made the right decision. And you know, he knows how much it sucks, and he was even, you know, candid about, you know, next year, how it's going to be twice as hard.
Yeah.
And everyone knows who they are now. There's right. No hiding it anymore.
They have that, like, oh, they're so cute and fun mentality anymore. They are a big boy now. They have to go play in the playoffs again, and they have to, if they're good enough, and they have to play up to expectations and potentially return to the NFC Championship. Yeah, I see what you guys are saying about the going for the one time and not the other time. It's just, I mean, you give the Niners the ball back when you're up, what was it, 17? You give the Niners the ball back after going for it on fourth. So you give them the ball back in their own zone, basically, on their own side of the 50. And they go all the way down. They attack. They score. And then you get the ball back, obviously, off the kickoff and lose it again. And then just like that's a 14-point swing within, like, probably four game minutes. Probably seven plays in total. So it was not just the not going for it. It was the fact that they could have punted and pinned them all the way back, punted or kicked or something, and just, I don't know, either gotten 3 points on the board or pinned the Niners all the way back and taken more time off the clock. They lost by three at the end of the day.
One more thing before we move on to the next team. The biggest thing that made me the most angry about Campbell was when they decided to run on third and goal with however much time was left, because they still had all three timeouts at that point, and they had to burn it. So then they had to go for the onside kick automatically.
Otherwise, they could have tried to, you know, make the Niners play football.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So that's where Campbell screwed up the biggest. I don't mind him sticking to his guns. Take the points maybe, but they'll be good. They'll be good going forward.
And now to transition from a team that lost by sticking to what got them there to a team that completely abandoned it. The Ravens had a great run game all year and won a bunch of games by being able to do that. And they go into the AFC Championship game and run 8 design run plays over the course of 60 minutes. And even the most amazing defensive efforts to keep them there the entire time that they were attempting a comeback, unable to do it because the offense just completely flipped the script and all of a sudden just became a potato. So,
yeah, that Ravens team, I was going to segue to them before you even brought it up, Braden, so I'm glad you did. You talk about 2 championship losses, and we talk about how the Lions are, you have this new persona, like, yeah, they've been there now, so now they're a big boy. They have to go out there and try it again next year. The Ravens have been that adult in the conversation for a number of years, almost like the Bills have just been squandered by, well, for starters, the fact that Patrick Mahomes has gone to 4 out of 5 big games and since 2019. And for second, just Lamar having MVP season after MVP consideration season and just not getting there in the playoffs, finding a way to lose in the playoffs. They got the one win this time after the bye, and then they just lost. They just lost bad on Sunday. I mean, there's really no way around it. The offense looked completely lost. Lamar did not really show up, and the Chiefs just kind of took a win. It wasn't like they steamrolled them. It was a game you'd see at 3:30 on a Sunday in October. It wasn't like either team was really shooting out. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. You put it perfectly. They rolled over on their face like we've seen for however many playoffs since Lamar Jackson's been the quarterback. And I feel for Baltimore fans because I think they felt like this was their best chance. Not saying that they're going anywhere because they're still a very young roster, but there are a lot of veterans there as well. And I feel like since the 2013 Super Bowl, if I'm not mistaken, I feel like they thought that this was truly their best team. And if you just put it in comparison to every other NFL roster, they probably were the best team in the league this year. I mean, the record shows it. So, just disappointing. Did you mention in your opening about how they only ran the ball 6 times?
Yeah, 8 design run plays or something like that. And the Chiefs defense, they have like some of the best pass defense in the league too. Mm-hmm. Like, not only were you supposed to do it just because your team always does it, but you weren't going to have an opportunity to do well with your wide receivers against this Chiefs team because, you know, contrary to the last time or at the beginning of their dynasty, they defend really well in those situations. And it goes to show, like, the wide receivers never showed up. You had your rookie wide receiver make big plays and then embarrass himself and miss opportunities. And, you know, it's missed opportunity after missed opportunity. And again, the defense looked really good. I think their defensive coordinators going to Seattle and coming off of that game, you've got to be very impressed if you're a Seattle fan, but you really did miss an opportunity and the whole NFL world was rooting for you too. So I don't know. Well, it's very, very disappointing for Ravens.
We save it for next week where we will go into a deep dive into the annual 58th, I should say, annual AFC versus NFC exhibitionary title. Mikey's birthday Eve, whatever you want to call it. We'll talk all about it. What are some people calling it? Football, parentheses, Taylor's version. I don't personally like that one as much. Ben probably does. We'll move on for 3 Up, 3 Down coming up here on the Red Zone. WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. I took over as sports director officially after the summer of 2022. We have had 2 years here as the host of the Red Zone alongside you boys and a number of other hosts over the years. And we've always done pick 6, but one thing I never brought back until this year was three up, three down. And we talked this week about how we kind of missed it, and we wanted to talk about it. And Ben today, when Braden and I were at TV, went and talked to Steve about it, and it was like a kid on Christmas.
Yeah.
He was so excited to get back into three up, three down, sent us his spreadsheet that is genius, has all the algorithms already planted in it that you can write your games, and it spits out your percentage and your stats and this, that, in between. Ben, you got the White House briefing on three up, three down today, so I'm going to let you take over and explain to the people what this game we're playing is.
Yeah, as you said, Steve was so excited when I brought it up to him. But yeah, basically what we're doing is picking six college basketball games for the week, so up until Wednesday night, which will be February 7th. And basically what we're doing is picking three favorites and three underdogs, trying to pick three upsets for the week. On top of that, it's if you're picking tonight, it's all based off the ESPN matchup predictor.
Yeah.
So whoever
reels on a 100% wheel.
Yes, whoever is the favorite in those games. One of the games that we can pick is over 80%. That way, our favorites, we're not just picking 99 point whatever percent favorites. So only one of them can be over 80%. And as well as that, to keep it local within the Valley, we have to take one Missouri Valley Conference game
at least
a week. At least.
At least. So it'll be myself, Braden, Ben, and Steve for pick six. See, three up, three down. I already called it pick six. It's very similar to pick six, just like for football. And it is money line, just like we do for pick six. However, we will be presenting a little bit more of an odds-based system when we talk about ESPN's matchup predictor. So we will start with Steve and his first pick. As Ben said, it can be any game from tonight, as soon as the show's over, to Wednesday at midnight. And so Steve's first game, he said Thursday, which is tonight on ESPNU. It's Longwood visiting High Point. High Point is the favorite in that one, 74% on the ESPN matchup predictor. Steve is going with High Point for his first up, and that's his first pick. I will go with my first pick, in which I'm saying tonight as well at 7:30 on ESPN+. Western Illinois visits Lindenwood, a newly minted D1 franchise, Lindenwood, in recent years. And that's why I decided to pick them, because I've seen them play ISU a couple times in various sports. Two very much ISU success. Western Illinois, 72.8% on the matchup predictor. So I'm going with Western as my first up pick. Ben, you want to go next?
Yeah. So I'm sticking in the Big Ten tonight at 7:30 on the Big Ten Network, Wisconsin and Nebraska. This would be a big upset, and that's what I'm sticking with. I'm saying Nebraska goes. They're the home team. They've had a couple big upsets in the Big Ten. They beat Purdue previously. I'm taking Nebraska to upset Wisconsin nice. Tonight. I don't have
big,
a score. So.
Big first one going with a down.
Yeah.
Braden?
For me, I'm also doing Big Ten. By the way, am I the only one that's ever done this before, or did you have a red zone your sophomore year that you did it?
I guest hosted at one point and did it.
Okay. Anyway, so Purdue, Wisconsin, that's on Sunday, and that's on CBS too. So Purdue the favorite by just under 60%, and I'm going to take that. That's my first up.
We move to Steve, who has another up for tonight, again at 6 o'clock on ESPN+, Louisiana Tech and Florida International. Louisiana Tech's the favorite in this one, 77%, and he's going with L-Tech for the up. I'm going to go with my second pick, which is Saturday. I picked two games from Saturday. Saturday's a great college basketball day. I enjoyed watching some big games last week, Duke, UNC, a lot of fun games. I'm going with an 11 a.m. start time on Fox, UConn and St. John's. I'm going with UConn at a 62%, so not a gimme, but a UConn win in my second up.
Let's keep it in the Big Ten for me on Saturday at 4:30 on Fox, Maryland at Michigan State. Michigan State's the favorite. I'm going to take another team to go into a Big Ten court and go Maryland, beating Michigan State. Michigan State's actually an 84% favorite, so I'm way against the odds on this one. So hopefully, I don't know, we'll see. Might be picking a little too much Big Ten here.
He's going Big Ten. He's going upset.
Yeah.
A couple different picks. Yeah. Braden?
My second of two Big Ten, and this is my over 80%. Illinois over Nebraska by 89.1% at home in Champaign. State Farm Center, they're going to get a win on Big Ten Network.
Steve, for his third pick, finally went down. He's also going Saturday at noon. South Carolina visits Georgia, in which Georgia is the favorited team by a 58%. Steve's going with South Carolina for his first down. Steve has obviously done this game before. We'll get to the teams in a minute, but his downs are all 58, 53, and 59% for the favorite. So he's going with teams that have about in the 40 range, and he's done this before. And then when you hear his Missouri Valley matchup, you'll get it too, what he decided to do with his 80%. He went above the 95 mark, but we'll go with that for his third pick. He went down South Carolina to beat Georgia at Georgia. I am going with my next one. I am moving to the Big Ten as well. Look at this. It's a Big Ten themed episode, and they haven't even expanded the conference yet.
How about that?
11 o'clock on Saturday, Penn State visits Indiana, and I'm taking the Hoosiers at home in that one. They are favored 69%, and I am – no, excuse me. I'm sorry. I had them for down. I didn't look right. I have Penn State. Excuse me. They are Indiana is favored 69%. I'm taking Penn State, though, because I was looking at the Penn State – last five, and they have played some decent basketball. They beat Rutgers on January 31st. Indiana's played solid ball, but I think Penn State can come in with the even record in conference at the 4-6 and do some damage in Indiana.
Let's head over to the Missouri Valley Conference, my Missouri Valley game. I was inspired because earlier, Braden, when we mentioned this, you were like, yeah, Evansville stinks. Well, Evansville's actually not that bad this year.
I got my two Evansville teams. I'm thinking of the women's team that's okay, really bad. Okay. But
I'm taking Evansville. They are going on the road to Valpo. 53.20% favorite is Evansville, and I'm sticking with Evansville as an up pick.
Previous pick, I went with Brad Underwood's Illinois team, and now I'm going to go with the team that employed him before that. Stephen F. Austin over Tarleton State, favored just 53%, but I am taking Stephen F. Austin as my last up.
Ooh, you did him in order, I see. I'm going back to the upside, so I went up, up, down. I'm going back to the upside, but first we'll talk to Steve, who's staying down. Steve, also on Saturday, 3 p.m. on the U. Richmond, who I saw beat Dayton last week. They are on the road against VCU. VCU is the favorite. Steve's going with the Spiders. VCU had a 53% advantage, but he's going with Richmond in that one. So again, a tight coin flip contest. He goes down. I'm going with another up at 7 o'clock on Monday. Maryland Eastern Shorehawks, they're going to host Norfolk State. Now, what do we know about Norfolk State? If anyone wants to jog the memory real quick for me.
We know a lot of things about
that. We know a lot about Norfolk State. Came in and beat us at Horton Fieldhouse earlier this year in an ISU matchup. This is my over 80, by the way. They're at 84% to beat Maryland Eastern. Why? Because Norfolk State is 14-8 on the season, 4-1 in their conference. Maryland Eastern, by the way, 5-14, 1-5 in their conference. By the way, Jamari Thomas, who had that great game in the Horton Fieldhouse, is their leading scorer at 17 points per game. So he's having a great season after that Horton Fieldhouse showing. Ben, let's move on.
We don't have many more weekends left of late night Pac-12, so get your kick in on ESPN2 at 9 o'clock. Oregon, UCLA, two teams that are pretty down this year. Oregon is currently the favorite at 53.70%, but I'm going down UCLA to upset Oregon. They're playing at home. I like this matchup for UCLA.
Braden?
Shout out to the new hires that are getting their orientations. They're going to be the first to know that Kansas State is going to upset Kansas on Monday night on ESPN. A 62.9% as a favorite, and I think they're going to lose.
I almost took it too, but just felt too much like a coin flip game for that to happen. We move on to Steve's fifth game. He is going to the Big Ten as well, noon on Sunday. It's Purdue visiting Wisconsin. He's going with Wisconsin, despite Purdue being favored. Wisconsin a 59% edge. So that's his final down. So his downs were all three in a row there. He went with South Carolina, Richmond, and Wisconsin, the most recent of which is Wisconsin to beat Purdue. At home, though. We move on to my fifth game. I'm going to have to go with Tuesday at 7, skipping the rest of those Monday games for Dayton and St. Joseph's. Dayton visiting St. Joseph's. Dayton is favored at 57% clip. I'm going with St. Joseph's. Dayton lost, like, bad. It was close towards the end because of foul trouble, but they lost bad to Richmond over the weekend, and I had to watch it. I was watching with a roommate, and I just didn't like it. So I'm going with St. Joseph's. I like that it's a coin flip game for the most part, and I want to pick them for one of my down.
head into the Mountain West Conference on Tuesday at 8 o'clock. Nevada going to Utah State. Utah State, the number 17 ranked team in the country. I've already picked all my downs, so I'm going up. Utah State, the favorite at 75.10%. Give me the Aggies.
I'll go to my MVC pick. Drake versus Indiana State. Indiana State favored by 70, but I think they're very similar teams, and the reason they're favored that much is just because they're at home. And I think Drake can be able to pull off an upset on ESPN2 on Saturday on the road.
And Steve agrees with that pick. Instead, he's taking Indiana State to beat Valpo. Feels pretty cut and dry. 97.5% edge, an A for Indiana State. Their favorite up in that one. He's going with Indiana State at home to beat Valparaiso as his Valley pick and his over 80 pick. Veteran strategy. By faculty advisor Steve Cease. Now we know why he was so excited to get three up, three down back. He's probably had his picks just set up for he probably has done it every week, just hoping we say we're bringing back three up, three down. We move on to my final pick on ESPN Plus Wednesday, February 7th at 7. My Valley pick as well. Missouri State will go to Northern Iowa. Northern Iowa's favored, and Missouri State is going to be my pick at down. Northern Iowa's favored 72%, which feels pretty high, but Ben and I talked a lot about it. This ESPN matchup predictor, very solid. That said, I feel like for a lot of these Valley mid-major type of things, they just kind of just look at the tangibles, and they don't really think about what could be more important. But they didn't even really look at the tangibles here. Missouri State 13-9 on the season, Northern Iowa 12-10, and in conference they have just a one-game difference. I think Missouri State is more like a 50% toss-up here, but they gave them like 28%. I feel pretty confident in the Bears in this one.
Heading over now, Wednesday, last game of the week that we pick. It's going to be some ACC play. I love Notre Dame, but they're going against Duke. Notre Dame's having a tough year. Duke's the favorite, number 17 in the country. This is my over 80 pick, 97.50% to beat the Irish, and they're going to get that done.
Did you see him beat Clemson over the weekend? It was a tight one.
Notre Dame or Duke?
It was a tight one. It was almost the first time in 20 years that Clemson won and Cameron Indoor.
That
but Duke squeaked it out, and their best player was I forget his last name, but he was the ACC player, the preseason player of the year. He was their best guy, and he like barely was shooting anything. He had like 8 points in the whole game. Filipowski, and he was barely playing. Couldn't hit his free throws, and Duke finally squeaked it out right at the end. All right, Braden, you tell us your pick.
I liked your pick on Duke beating Cheater Dame, but I am taking it's Pitt versus NC State. Just slightly favored is NC State. I'm going to take Pittsburgh for the University of Pittsburgh for the upset here, and that'll just about do it.
Yep. Thank you for listening to this edition of The Red Zone. That was our first edition of 3 Up, 3 Down. We'll keep it going through the rest of February and maybe even into March as we get into the tournament. Thank you for listening to The Red Zone.
This has been Red Zone.
Robinson looking out, drives inside, going to find Mary Crofton for her first three of the day, and it's good.
Curry owned the league last year, personal awards and numbers.
We'll take off with you next Thursday at 6. For now, you can listen to any past broadcasts on WZND.com. Touchdown in 3, 2, 1.
Agree, have good fun.